Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. Even if you don't know the name Nell Scovell, you've probably seen her work and laughed at her jokes. She's written for The Simpsons, Late Night with David Letterman, Murphy Brown. She created Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, and co-wrote the 2013 blockbuster book Lean In with Facebook Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg. She's also written jokes for President Obama and Hillary Clinton. Nell Scovell now has a new book called Just the Funny Parts and a Few Hard Truths About Sneaking into the Hollywood Boys Club.
Okay. The most Hollywood thing I could do is have a bad telephone connection.
Well, and speaking of California things to do, you do have to tell us where we're talking to you.
I am in a car and driving along the back streets of Hollywood because the freeways are so backed up. I'm not driving at the same time as I'm talking because that would be dangerous. So it's very Hollywood.
Well, you know, you're just confirming what Vermonters think, you know, where everyone from L.A. is talking to them from. So, let's talk about why you wrote this book. You normally work behind the curtain. You are the person who people don't see or hear as the writer for various shows. What made you decide to pull back the curtain and step forward and speak in your own voice?
Well, if I hadn't written my memoir, who would? I felt I was the most qualified person to do that. And there were three things I love: comedy, creativity, and equality. And I wanted to write a book that celebrated all three of those things. And I think people are fascinated with pop culture and having been part of pop culture for over 30 years, that was my hook. I always say, you know, I hope people come for The Simpsons and stay for the feminism.
Well, you came to this through a very unorthodox route. You worked as a sports writer on the Harvard Crimson while you were in college, and then were a sports writer for the Boston Globe. Where did comedy end up fitting into this picture?
Well, sports is one of the few places in a newspaper where you really need to hook the audience, right? You can't just say what the box score was. That's kind of boring, and it's why we say it's the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. You know, there's emotion, and there's heart, and there's also a lot of comedy. And I grew up in Boston in the late 60s and early 70s and loved the Red Sox and the Celtics and the Bruins. So writing sports was sort of my gateway drug to writing comedy.
What was the segue? What was the connection where you decided you had something to contribute in the world of comedy?
I didn't grow up thinking that was a profession. Journalism was. So after the Globe, I moved to New York. I wrote for magazines, including Spy magazine, which was this very snarky, sarcastic perspective. In fact, the very first cover story of Spy was the 10 most embarrassing New Yorkers, including Donald Trump. So I worked at Spy, then I worked at Vanity Fair, and one day I bumped into an editor who said to me, "Nell, I don't mean this as an insult, but I really think you could write for television." And it was the first time I ever considered it. And I think she knew that a lot of my magazine pieces were very visual and kind of punchy. So that was the first time I thought of it.
When you got your first jobs in the writers' rooms doing comedy writing, you looked around. What did you see in that room? Who was sitting in that room?
A lot of white male faces. And it was, look, every field is bad. I think comedy might be slightly worse because it's so subjective. Like, who gets to decide what's funny? The people in charge. And it's very easy to just dismiss someone as not funny without having to offer any statistical proof of why you feel that.
Do you feel like, so, I mean, at first, was it hard to get the jobs if you were constantly auditioning entirely in front of men?
I think so. Early on, I was on a show called The Wilton North Report, which would be utterly unforgettable, except the guys in the office next to me were Greg Daniels and Conan O'Brien. And the show got canceled after a month, and we were all sitting around with some of the other writers discussing our futures and whether we would have them. And one of the guys turned to me and said, "Well, Nell, you're lucky." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, I was looking for a woman." And I said, "Woman and nine men, how does that make me lucky?" So even like very early on in my career, I knew that statistically the odds were against me. But at the same time, I was a good culture fit. I liked sports. I liked science fiction. You know, I was happy staying up late and eating cold pizza, and all those other stereotypical male things.
Do you think that the humor that you write as a woman, or that other women writers, compose, is different than male humor? What do you feel like you contribute that wasn't there before?
Well, I don't think there's a difference in the craft of writing jokes. Early on in my career, I wrote for Gary Shandling, who paid me what he considered a high compliment, which was, "You write like a guy." And by that, I think he meant I wrote hard jokes. And so I have been a joke writer. What's different between men and women is you bring different experiences into the writer's room. So not that long ago, I was working on a show on the Sci-Fi Channel called Warehouse 13. And the storyline was that one of the agents got pregnant, and I had written the outline, and in it I put in this detail that her sense of smell gets very acute. So I'm getting notes on the outline, and one of the executives says, "Well, that smell thing, is that real?" And I went, oh yeah, it happened to me. And someone else said, "Well, it sounds made up." And I realized, of the seven people on this call, I was the only one who had actually been pregnant. So that's the kind of thing you bring to the table, is you have knowledge of what half the population goes through.
We're talking with Nell Scovell. She is the author of the new book, Just the Funny Parts, and A Few Hard Truths About Sneaking Into a Hollywood Boys Club. She is a television writer, producer, and director. So the writer's
I have a traffic update. I'm now on the 110 freeway heading to Pasadena.
And is the traffic moving?
It is moving. See, it's not so bad.
Okay. So one of your big breakthroughs was working for David Letterman, but this was a problematic experience. Talk about your experience with Letterman.
So in 1990, I was hired as the second woman ever to write for Letterman. The first two wasn't dating him. And, the original head writer was Meryl Marco, who's a comedic genius and was Dave's girlfriend at the time. And it was a dream job. You know, he was a comedy giant. So many of the people I admired had worked on that show. So, even though I already had a career in sitcoms, I'd written a Simpsons episode, I worked on Newhart, I come back to New York to work on Late Night, and it's not a fun place for a woman to work. And it's, you know, it was pre-Anita Hill, so we didn't even have language to figure out beyond, like, wow, this place is messed up. But I left. I quit. And I thought about telling Dave, who actually was always very nice to me, why I felt like women were treated as second-class citizens at that place, but decided not to. And then, interestingly enough, you know, you fast forward to 2009, he sits at his desk and admits that he's had sex with women he worked with. And that was kind of a turning point for me, because I wanted to speak out about my own experience and also point out that there were zero women in the writer's room at Letterman and Leno in 2009.
You then wrote a piece for, I think it was Vanity Fair, about what did you have to say? And this was a big deal for you to kind of, you know, go public with your concerns.
Right. I think, you know, I was an insider who was criticizing an comedic institution. And what I said was that I was shocked that we had three female Supreme Court justices at this time, but zero women on a late night talk show. And look, if the audience were only male, I would get it. But the audience was actually, you know, 50-50. So the argument is always women don't apply for these jobs. And I don't believe that. I think women don't know about the jobs. I think talent is out there. You know, they call it a pipeline problem, but in just the funny parts, I say it's not a pipeline problem. It's a broken doorbell problem. And you have women and people of color on the doorstep ringing that bell, and nobody's opening the door. I mean, in 33 years, this is so egregious. Late Night with none of the Letterman shows ever hired a single writer of color.
So what perpetuates the situation in 2018 that you first saw when you walked into the writers' rooms in the 80s and early 90s? How has this institution remained impervious to all the diversifying that has gone on in other areas?
I think it's just deep cultural bias, and they're high-paying shows, they're fun things to work on, and I think, it's guys keeping it to themselves.
You have a funny part in your new book, Just the Funny Parts, where you reconnect with Letterman. Talk about what happened when you found yourself writing for an event that he was, I guess, emceeing.
Right. So I was hired to help write the 2014 Kennedy Center Honors. And they were honoring Lily Tomlin and Tom Hanks, among others. And I get this call from the other writer, Lewis Friedman, and he says, Nell, I think you should know David Letterman's going to be introducing the Tom Hanks video. And I go, okay. And then he goes, that means he'll be there. And my blood pressure shot through the roof. I hadn't seen him since 1990, and I wondered if he had read this article, which was critical, not specifically of him, but of the show in general. And we end up having this very Aaron Sorkin moment where we're walking and talking down a corridor. And I asked him if he had read my article, and he said no. And I said, well, it's about gender discrimination in late night TV. And he responded, I don't worry about that stuff. So that kind of tells you everything. Although the good part was I had always kind of felt guilty that maybe I should have said something earlier, and it would have changed things, and that made it very clear that it never was going to change.
Well, that would have taken an enormous amount of courage for a young woman early in her career who had just finally broken the glass ceiling in the world of comedy.
Right, but it's not a glass ceiling. You know, it's made out of that Terminator metal that shatters and then reconstitutes.
All right, so let's fast forward to this week. You return to the CBS Late Show studio, but now it's Stephen Colbert in the seat. And you were on there Monday night, and I watched. I'm a big Colbert fan. And you referenced the fact that, you know, it was interesting to be back, or it was nice to be back. He didn't pick up on that, but what was that like for you?
Well, I actually hadn't worked in the Ed Sullivan Theater. I had worked at 30 Rock, like Liz Lemon. But it was the scene of the crime, where he admitted that he had had sex with women he worked with. And, boy, if 9 years ago you had said, you know, he won't be on behind that desk, but you'll be on that stage, I would have said, well, that's just nuts. But it was weird because I worked in this business so long, and I've been on so many of those sets, but never with the cameras on.
So what's that like? I mean, Colbert is a big theatrical event, from, you know, the opening shots where he runs out and high fives everyone. What was it like for you to be in the seat being interviewed?
Well, he's such a funny, smart, nice man, and they worked very hard to make me feel relaxed about the whole thing. So it was a joy. It really was. I mean, it was terrifying, but I think it was nice to have that experience and to know what it's like on the other side of the camera.
So you had Colbert read jokes that you would have written for Donald Trump if he had asked. Can you tell us one?
Sure, I'll tell you when he didn't tell. Let's see if I can. Here's one. Mike Pence has a rule that he won't be alone with a woman unless his spouse is in the room. Melania has a rule that she won't be alone with her spouse unless the photographer's in the room.
Okay. Well, since we're talking about writing for presidents, what was it like writing for President Obama, and what's your opinion of how he delivers a joke?
Oh, so, look, I grew up in Newton, Massachusetts, which is arguably the most liberal city in the most liberal state. So writing jokes for President Obama was my ideal way of serving my country. and he's a great joke teller. My friend Albert Brooks once compared him to Johnny Carson. He said he has Johnny Carson's timing, which I think is true. And I also got to write jokes for candidate Hillary Clinton for the Al Smith dinner, and I thought she did a great job. She was very self-deprecating, and that's what, you know, Trump can't do, self-deprecating. Although I do think he has a sense of humor. I just think it's mean and at other people's expense.
How do you, what's your process? You get told you have to write something, let's say, for Obama. Where do you go? Where do you put yourself mentally to compose a joke that would be appropriate for him and that he would deliver well?
Well, you get inside the person's head. We were texting and you said, write a joke for James Comey that James Comey would tell.
Okay,
so
good.
Rifle through, you know, what's on James Comey's mind, what has he said recently. I thought, oh, well, he compared the Trump Organization to the mob, and then it took me to this joke here, which is, what's the difference between the Trump Organization and the mob? Well, the mob cares about all family members.
Okay. Well, you'll have to pass that along to Comey, since he is on, I think, every single show on every single network this week. So he should have plenty of opportunity to add something like that in. There's
my book is way funnier than his. Although, if you like kinky sex, I think his oddly has more than mine.
Well, I think the trick is, Nell, somehow get Barnes & Noble or Amazon to bundle your book with his, and then you can retire early. So your latest act has been co-authoring with Sheryl Sandberg the book Lean In, which is about women and leadership and their careers. And you have become, you know, something of the wise, I won't say elder, but just a wise professional for many other women who are entering the entertainment world, the writing world. What advice do you have? Because a lot of the stories you tell do have a serious side, which is that women have to work, proverbially twice as hard and be twice as good to make it in the men's world.
Right. I mean, Sarah Silverman was once asked for advice to give to women in comedy, and she said, be undeniable. And I get that advice, but it's also... and this isn't criticizing her, but it's so unfair that you have to be undeniable because, you know, men can just be solid or amusing and work. So that's a pretty high bar to pass. But the advice I like giving all young starting writers is that the only way to move forward creatively is to allow yourself to be judged. And I do think it's harder for women to open themselves up to judgment. We're more insecure. I think that's a lot of cultural, for many cultural reasons. But that's the deal. And it's not what you start, and it's not even what you finish. It's what you put out for the world to see.
If part of your work in writing and, or, you know, you're constantly writing, you know, these spec scripts, which are, you know, essentially auditioning, you deal routinely with rejection. How do you pick yourself up off the floor after rejection and do a good job the next day, go right back into it?
Right. Well, in the book, I say, do you like disappointment? If you do, have I got a career for you? There is. And, you know, I was fortunate. I came from a really loving, stable family. And my mother was very warm and protective. I talk in the book about how she was kind of my Harry Potter scar that helped me believe in myself. Even on the worst days. So, you know, you lean on friends, you lean on family, and I think you just have to understand that there's such a big, this is the theme, I guess, of this, you know, level of subjectiveness to what we do. And just because somebody doesn't like it actually doesn't mean it's not good.
So in your book, we just have a minute left, but you have the four stages of a writer's life. Stage one, who is Nell Scovell? Stage two, get me Nell Scovell. Three is get me a younger, cheaper Nell Scovell. And stage four, who is Nell Scovell? What's stage five for you, Nell?
I'm hoping you to loop around again to get me Nell Scovell.
Okay. Well, on that note, we should let you go and get back to traffic. And I hope I haven't done anything to lead you into the wrong lane or anything. But Nell Scovell, the author of Just the Funny Parts and a writer and director and producer, thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation this week.
Oh, thanks, David, for having me.